Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the SAF Holland SE Analysts and Investors Conference Call on Q3 2020. At this time, all participants have been placed on listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Michael Schickling.
Yes, good morning and welcome to the Q3 Analysts and Investors Conference Call of SAF Holland. This morning, we have published our full set of numbers as well as the presentation slides used in this call. Today's speakers will be our CEO, Alexander Geis, and our new CFO, Inka Koljonen. We will start with a presentation followed by a Q&A session. This call is scheduled for 1 hour, and we will try to cover as many questions as possible. I now would like to hand over the microphone to our CFO, Inka Koljonen.
Yes, so good morning, everyone. My name is Inka Koljonen. I'm CFO of SAF Holland since September 1, 2020. It's a pleasure for me, for the first time, to present the Q3 numbers in this round as a basis then for a hopefully lively Q&A discussion. Let's start with an overview of the 9-month figures. Yes. We've had definitely a good Q3 and 9 months. If we start with the revenues did go down by 30% as expected, but if we compare that to the significant global market drop in regions EMEA and Americas, we performed better than the markets. Then if we look at the earnings or the margin situation, and let's start with the adjusted EBIT margin, which is our main guidance KPI here. The Q3 adjusted EBIT was at 6.4%. This is an entire percentage point or 100 basis points higher than previous year. So we are here better in Q3 than in pre-COVID conditions. If we add all the quarters up for this year and come up to the 9-month number, we are at 5.4%, which is slightly above the full year guidance which was given out. And as updated last night, this is also the main reason why we then uplifted the guidance for the full year. Then coming back to the 9-month margin of 5.4%, the main drivers for this improvement is firstly the high share of the aftermarket business. We are meanwhile at about 30% aftermarket versus last year 25%. But moreover, the management took early in the crisis decisive actions to cut costs in all areas, and these activities have been continued throughout the year and will continue also into next year. In addition to that, markets are also picking up and we are gaining market share. Then to the cash flow. The cash flow is very positive. Our operating free cash flow is at 64.6% versus 12 million in previous year. Main driver is here the net working capital improvement and also the lower CapEx. The CapEx is at around 16 million versus 37 million in previous year. And with that, we are definitely within our guidance range of 2 to 2.5% of sales. On the next page, we see the revenue and the result of the group on a quarterly basis. And I think this is an important and interesting chart because it shows and indicates how we are trading and how the trends are. So the group 9 months revenue, as mentioned, dropped by 30%. But if we look at the quarter by quarter development, it clearly shows that we have bottomed in Q2 and Q3 revenues are already 20% above Q2. And the same goes for also for the margin development quarter by quarter. The Q3 margin is at 6.4%, which is significantly above the margin we achieved in Q2 when it was only 2.7%. And again, the Q3 margin is even above previous year. Quality of earnings, a topic I have been and we have been addressed as a company in many discussions with investors and analysts since I started, and also read some pre-comments this morning. I would like to talk about this a little bit. So our adjustments or the quality of earnings have significantly improved versus last year. We are at the moment at EBIT adjustments of about 19 million versus EBIT adjustments of 28 million in previous year. So there's a clear improvement, and we have a roadmap also to further improve this into 2021. The adjustments of 19 million that I just mentioned refer mainly to restructuring, for which we have provided a breakdown on this page. So you see also here severance payments, closure of subsidiaries and the company in China. This will not occur in 21 anymore. So already, naturally, the restructuring costs are going down into 21. In addition to that, we will take a more conservative approach to how we treat adjustments and restructuring expenses. Also, no goodwill impairment is included in the adjustments, so the goodwill impairment did not occur and was also not included. And with that, I would like to hand over to our CEO, Alex Geis, for some more details on the regional developments.
Thank you, Inka. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and also a very warm welcome from my side. This is Alex Geis speaking, and I would like to give you a bit more insight into the regions. And I can already summarize that we as a company, together with our people worldwide, making a huge progress in all the regions. But let's start with the biggest region in terms of sales, which is EMEA. You can see on the on this page. On the upper left side, you can see in the first 9 months, sales came in with just 405 million. This is a little bit lower than last year, but this came in with 8.7% adjusted EBIT margin, which is not that bad in those times. I would like to draw your attention on the middle section, specifically on the Q3 sales. Here you can see with 137 million in Q3 in the EMEA region, the numbers were very close to previous year. So only 7 million down, which is not too bad. But if you then go a little bit further down and see the adjusted EBIT margin, which came in Q3 this year with 10%, that's obviously better than the 8.9 last year, so we as a team in EMEA outperformed 2019 in this year. Also worthwhile to mention on the right side that the profitability in EMEA, and I will speak about that in Americas on the next slide, does include inventory write-downs of 4.7 million, which we had to do to the new accounting rules. So this is also included in the profitability. The last bullet point on the right side, you can see that we also had restructuring expenses in EMEA of 2.8. This is mainly severance payments and also costs related to the change from Luxembourg SA to the SE now being headquartered in Germany. We already announced that we had a strong October some days ago, and I can openly say that in November and December and even January, ladies and gentlemen, we are nearly fully booked. So we are quite optimistic looking into the future. Worthwhile also to mention that we gained market share specifically in axles in the EMEA region with smaller and medium-sized trailer manufacturers. Now I would like to go on the next page and speak about our second biggest region in terms of sales, which is Americas. Sales-wise, the Americas region got hit the hardest, as we know. This is mainly driven by trailer axles and suspensions, where we are quite strong, also in terms of sales. The market went down by nearly 50% in trailer axles or in trailer itself. Truck business also went down as well, but here we see since late summer also a good recovery, but I will come back to this later on. Also here, starting with the sales on the upper left side, you can see that our sales went down to 250 million in the first 9 months, and that sales came in with 3.5% of adjusted EBIT margin. If you now go to the middle section where we have the quarters or the sales of the quarters, you can see that we started not too bad beginning of the year. Then we dropped to 69 million in sales in the second quarter, which was quite weak. And also, since our main market is in North America, is the US, we also can see that the last quarter with 76 was not a really good quarter, but it's improving. And as I said, also here, we see already an upswing in October, specifically in the US. If you now draw your attention to the adjusted EBIT margin in Q3, you can see that the profitability came in with 5.6%, which was slightly better than last year. So here we specifically optimized our SG&A, and this also will last into the years to come. We stopped loss-making sales. We consolidated product portfolios, and we now have a good foundation for the future. And as I mentioned, the October was also a very good and I would say even an outstanding month in terms of sales and profitability. We did our homework and this pays off now. On the right side also, the profitability, you can see that at the section of adjusted EBIT, the second bullet point, that the profitability includes inventory write-downs of also 4.1 million, which is included there. The last bullet point on the lower right side, you can see that restructuring expenses came in with 4 million. This is mainly severance payments and costs related to Forward 2.0, and the majority of those costs will not reoccur next year. On the next slide, coming to the last region, I have to say this is the last remaining problem child for us, the APEC region. Well, I have to say that we struggle in China only, not in the rest of APEC, like in India, Singapore, and Australia. On the left upper side, you can see that the sales nearly halved to 54 million. This is mainly driven by ceased export business as a result of the trade dispute between China and the US. We were heavily focusing in the past on export sales and not that much on domestic sales. We changed that now. And also the delayed ramp-up of the new Chinese facility in Jiangsu, where we were not able to send any exports for more than 6 months, we got a hit here. Worthwhile to mention that meanwhile, we have German and Australian operations experts sitting in Jiangsu and helping to finalize the last steps to fully ramp up that plant. Going down to the lower left side, speaking about the adjusted EBIT margin, this looks horrible with minus 9.9%, which is in absolute numbers 5.3 million, but we are coming closer to break even. Sales in the third quarter of 2020 came in with 20 million, a little bit lower than the year before, also driven, as I said before, with the missing export business. And the profitability came in with minus 15.1%. Main drivers were also low volumes due to the ramp-up delay of our plant, and we also did sell a lot of old stock at very low prices. This was the main reason. I have to say that we now did finish with the last bullet point. You can see the total number of restructuring expenses, 4.9. We finished the cleaning of the legacy issues from the past with all the plants and production and warehousing sites we had in China, and also finished the consolidation here. So now we're going into a much better 2021. We have a new team. Our robots and painting line in China are running now, and we are able to capture the first bigger disc brake orders from domestic trailer builders, which we didn't have before. Also, our landing leg line is now running, and we are producing already 300 sets per day. In October, the APEC region was very close to break even, and the plan for sure for 2021 is to earn some money also in that region. Before I hand back to Inga on the next slide, please let's take a look on how we see the first 9 months, year-over-year development of the different markets. So on page 10, starting on the left side with Europe, we saw the first 9 months coming in the truck area with a minus 30 to minus 35, trailer minus 25 to minus 30. North America, you can see somewhere around minus 40 to minus 45, 50% in both truck and trailer. So we got hit the hardest here. China, truck plus 10 to plus 20 and trailer plus 10. South America, which is very good for us since we have a suspension specialist down in Brazil, truck minus 35 to minus 40 and trailer with only minus 10 to minus 15. India, another huge drop, and I will come back to this later on. Truck minus 70, trailer minus 60, and we clearly see that India have bottomed here. Before I come back, I would like to hand over back to Inka to speak a little bit more about our investments and DNA. And Inka, please.
Thank you. Yes, so then we come to investments and depreciation amortization. Investments in PPE and intangible assets are at 16 million or 2.3% of the group sales in 9 months, which compares to a number of 3.7% in previous year. So this is within the new guidance of maximum 2.5% of sales. And this is also a discussion we are having on a regular basis. And I have want to comment that we have within the board, we have analyzed this in detail, really. The 2.5% maximum is a sustainable level going forward. There has been a high investment phase, which started in 17, continued in 18 and 19. We have invested a lot, especially in EMEA and China in the past, where we have a state-of-the-art facility. I'm talking about China specifically. So going forward, 2.5% is a sustainable level and does not only include maintenance investment, but also includes some punctual growth as well. Depreciation and amortization is higher as percentage of sales. This is clear. We have lower sales. This is known. But in absolute terms, we are talking about a number of 27 million in the first 9 months of 20. Versus 24 million in previous year. So we are pretty stable here in absolute terms, and as you all know, this is a result of previous investments. Then I would like to come to a positive topic, in my view, the net working capital development. Here we see the relative and absolute development of net working capital. Previously, focus has been mainly on the absolute development. Net working capital, if you look at the latest bar, the Q3 number is significantly down, both in absolute and relative terms versus previous year. The Q3 20 number is at 139 million or 14% of sales versus a number of 16.4% in previous year. So significant reduction also compared to the sales. Main driver here, and this is the mainly a result of a program called Cash is King. This has been communicated to you. It started already in spring this year and has been executed in a very disciplined manner throughout the organization. The focus of the program or the target of the program was to lower absolute overdues and inventories. As mentioned in the press release, we are more or less already there in terms of achieving our full year targets, and now we need to make sure that we will keep on these current low levels also in the upcoming 2 months, and this is what we're doing. So if we talk about the numbers, the receivables are down by 34% versus previous year, specifically due to the improved cash collection. The inventories are down by 27% versus previous year. So here also with the area of inventories, we're showing that we have been able to adjust working capital to the lower volumes. Cash is King program will be continued also into 2021 with an enhanced scope and a focus on inventories, an initiative which we are running together with my colleague CEO André Philipp. Be prepared for more to come also from this area. On the next page, I have included a new analysis in the presentation. This is something I show both internally and externally. And it's something where we can really demonstrate the cash generation of the company, and I specifically look at the net cash flow from operating activities compared to EBITDA. This is what I call the cash conversion, because at the end, the net cash flow from operating activities is the number that we are able to convert from EBITDA into cash that we can then spend for whatever it is, CapEx, M&A, interest payments, and so on. And if we look at the 9 months numbers, we are almost at 80 million for the net cash flow from operating activities, comparing to an EBITDA of 54 million, so clearly above 100% cash conversion. This is a very good number, and the drivers you see directly in this chart. If we look at the 9 months in 19, we had a net working capital cash outflow of 25 million, comparing to a net working capital cash inflow of 22 million. So even with a lower EBITDA this year, our cash generation is significantly higher. If we look at further down the cash flow statement, also the operating free cash flow is very good and above previous year with 64 million versus 12 million. And here the driver is clearly CapEx. And again, we will have also going forward a clear focus on net working capital and cash and CapEx to improve the cash generation and the balance sheet structure of the company. Balance sheet structure of the company and the ratio of net debt to EBITDA, also a question very often addressed to us from investors and analysts. Our target range is somewhere between 2 and 3 times at max, really at max. This has been historically achieved. Then looking into this year, Q2, we were hit by COVID, and the ratio went up to some 4.6 times. But if we look at Q3 numbers, we are moving again in the right direction. So for Q3, the ratio is somewhere at 3.7 times. And this is clearly driven by the cash generation and therefore with the lower debt. So again, we have used the strong cash generation to improve our net debt situation, and we'll continue also going forward to look into this very closely. And with that, I would like to hand over back to Alex Geis for the outlook.
Thank you, Inka. As Inka explained, we also did our homework in terms of cash generation, and our teams worldwide did a good job here. You can count on us that we will continue this. This is also from my side. Now coming to our production outlook for the whole year of 2020. Also starting on the left side, Europe slightly better, with truck still being minus 30 to minus 35. Trailer a little bit better, with minus 15 to minus 20 in total. North America also slightly better, with truck now somewhere around minus 40 to minus 45, and trailer also 40 to 45. China, same as 19 in truck, with 0 to plus 5, and trailer a bit down with a minus 5 to a minus 10. South America, truck still hit with minus 30 to minus 35, and trailer getting a little bit better with still a minus 5 to a minus 10. India, as I said before, still very much down with new truck minus 40 to minus 50, and trailer also minus 40 to minus 50. Please allow me to say that in India we have now a market share of nearly 55%. That means we are ready for the upswing in the years to come. Having spoken about the 2020 markets, I would like to go to page 17, please, and revise our 2020 guidance to the better. On the next slide, you can see, firstly, sales remains unchanged. With sales, we still see with a decline somewhere around 20 to 30% year over year. Secondly, due to the homework we did and the positive market signals, we raise our adjusted EBIT guidance to now between 5 and 6%. And thirdly, our CapEx remains unchanged with around 2.5% of sales. And as usual, I would like to summarize on the next page, please. So your key takeaways are, and this is valid year over year, our consistent aftermarket business with the population we have in all the markets safeguards our profitability. Our SG&A savings programs will be continued also in 2021. Our Cash is King program is on track, and we do have a very solid financial profile. And lastly, we keep pushing our operational excellence as key driver for our future success, specifically in the region Americas and there the US and also in China. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to us, and we are open for questions now. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 and a star key on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press 9 and star again. Please press 9 followed by a star key in order to raise a question. And the first question is being registered. So the first questioner is Mr. Julien Bateau from Pascal Advisors. The floor is yours.
Hello, good morning. I'm surprised to be the only one to ask questions, to be honest. Just in terms of rebound for next year, we see this year is an absolute disaster for both Europe and US. If you were to put a number on the rebound and what you see for October and November, as you say, you point out that in EMEA, for example, it was a very good month and you were fully booked. Where would you expect the market to come back compared to 19 or 18, basically?
Bonjour, Julien. This is Alex Geis. Let me try to answer your question as follows. Well, I wouldn't say that EMEA was a disaster for us because, as you see, the first 9 months, they came only in with a minus of 17.8. Okay, it's still a decline. Every decline I don't like. Okay, so but it was not as bad as in other regions for us, specifically for everybody in North America. It's pretty much dominated the sales in EMEA in the next year by what's going to happen with all the lockdowns. Okay, we still face the second wave in all the countries throughout Europe. Also a easy lockdown here or a soft lockdown in Germany. We stay cautious. We have our productions ready. As I said before, in November, December, and January, we are nearly fully booked. We operate in a 2-shift in one plant, 3 shifts in the other plant, and also the Turkish team, or Turkish plant, is nearly fully booked, which is good for us. But we have to remain cautious. I don't know what's going to happen in March or April, but we target a slight increase for 2021, also for Europe. Let me say it in that way. For North America, we clearly have bottomed with nearly 50% of the market. I said that we got hit the hardest, specifically in the trailer and trailer axle and suspension business, where we have a good market share. And this is also the majority of sales we do in North America, which is mainly Americas for us. Here we clearly see that there might be an upswing of somewhere around, let's say, 15, 20, 25%. If we can participate, let's hope that we are able to do that. But I'm convinced that we have now the right setup and we still continue to improve our operational business there and the setups that we are ready for the upswing. And last but not least, APEC region, I elaborated on this earlier. I'm okay with our result sales we do in Pacific, so Australia, New Zealand, in Far East Asia, and also in India, which is okay. Where we struggled is China. We are trending in the right direction. We have to fill our production with domestic sales, and there might be also an uplift now with a change from Trump to Biden, that there might be a little bit of a release in the tariffs, and if this is happening due to our fleet pull-through in the U.S., we can also regain that business additionally on top of the domestic sales we are targeting for the last quarter and also 2021. So to summarize that, we think and we hope that there will be a better 2021 than in 2020. Does that answer your question somehow?
Yes. That's perfect. Can you comment a little bit on aftermarket versus OEM in the Europe and America region? How is it going? What do you see? I mean, it seems to me that aftermarket in Europe is pretty good because the correct me if I'm wrong, but I guess the margin improvement we see in EMEA is also driven by the mix. But maybe on what happened in America, because if I remember correctly, in 18 and 19, the aftermarket in America was not so strong because there was a lot of OEM.
Yeah, let's try to give a little bit more meat on the bone to also the aftermarket. Our profitability is not mainly driven by aftermarket, because also in EMEA we increased over the last couple of years the profitability due to the fact that we did not focus that much anymore on the big key accounts or only on the key accounts. We were ramping up our sales in the last couple of years to the medium-sized and smaller trailer builders. Yeah, that adds a little bit of complexity, but the teams here in Europe are capable of handling that. But that comes with a little bit higher profitability. So the mix between having a strong aftermarket and also focusing more on medium and smaller sized customers helps to increase the profitability. On the America side or on the US side, we have mainly the US market. We have the Canadian market where we have up to 80-85% market share in fifth wheels and in landing legs in the aftermarket. So we are quite healthy there. If we talk about the US, we have also a very healthy sales split between OE and the aftermarket. In the aftermarket, I have to admit, there might be a little bit of an uplift also in the future, because with the ramp up of the disc brake technology in trailer axles, we build and create a higher population of trailer axles equipped with disc brake, and the disc brake aftermarket is more profitable over a drum brake market. So the more population we build in the US or North America, the more we can generate up profitable or even more profitable aftermarket sales in the years to come. And this is the clear target. As a reminder, the split of drum versus disc in North America is somewhere around 85-20.
That's the installed base, right?
The installed base, which means also then the base for the future. So this brake market is slightly increasing. If there might be a new regulation coming up, maybe in 2 or 3 years, that will give us a huge boost in this because we are market leader in disc brakes. As you have seen, for instance, in China with the regulation of disc brake technology for dangerous goods trailers, roughly two years ago, and the add-on of suspension with air suspension, so the combination disc with air from beginning of 2020 on, that gave a boost in disc brake axles also in China. If this is going to happen also in North America in the future, this will be a great thing. To complete my saying, if you go back now to Europe, the split between disc versus drum is the opposite, so it's likely 75-25 or even 80-20.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
The next question comes from Mr. Nikolai Kempf of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. It's Nikolai Kempf speaking from Deutsche Bank. So my question would be also on Europe. And let me say that this is a very strong number you showed us here in Q3. And can you give some more color what drove this number? You mentioned the aftermarket, but also the new customers more in a small segment. And also can you say a bit more on the upcoming months, because you stated that you booked out until January. Is it driven by truck or by trailer or a special market? That would be helpful. Thanks.
Okay, yeah. As I said before, aftermarket business is continuously strong. Yes, we got a little bit of a dip in Q2 That was mainly driven by lower transportation volume, specifically in Q2, because nobody knew what's going on with this COVID thing. And also the bigger spare parts dealers did reduce also their inventory to collect a little bit cash into the company. So we bottomed in Q2. Q3 was already nearly back on 2019. And with our installed base and the axles we pumped in the market specifically in 17, 18, and 19, this will also be growing in the years to come. Secondly, once again, OE business, we were focusing much more on smaller and medium-sized trailer customers throughout the EMEA region. So that goes from Moscow to, let's say, to the Stan countries down to even to South Africa, where we gained some market share in various markets. That was good for the profitability. And to also explain what is the difference between our North American and our European business, if you see the split between trailer-related products versus truck-related products, in Europe, it's like 90, it's trailer, and only 10 is, or even less than 10 is truck. Truck for us means fifth wheels. We have about a market share in Europe of 25 to 27% in fifth wheels. In the US, we have about 60% of the total sales, OE sales, is trailer related. So axles, drum axles, disc axles, we are number one in mechanical suspension in North America. And only 40% of the total OE sales is truck related. Truck related for us in North America means it's both. It's fifth wheels, where we are the clear market leader with more than 50% market share. And secondly, truck suspensions. So the truck manufacturers in the US, they also purchase from suppliers truck suspensions, whereas the truck manufacturers in Europe, they do the own production in-house, so they don't buy outside. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and just to clarify for Europe, so it's mainly trailer, which
90%, yes.
Yeah.
90% of our OE sales is trailer, roughly 10% is truck related. And okay, since we are market leader in trailer axles, specifically in disc brake axles, of course we have synergies in terms of sourcing. We are the biggest consumer of disc brakes worldwide with all the axles we manufacture, and this also helps to save costs. And secondly, as we mentioned the last time, we did sign with all the workers and people working for us here in Germany a supplemental agreement, which was effective March 1, which will last close to the next 5 years. And this also helps to keep the SG&A rate, let's say, at a level where we think it should be.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you.
Next question comes from Mr. Frederick Bitter of Hauck Aufhäuser. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. So good morning, Ms. Kullion, Mr. Geis. Great results, and obviously the share price is up accordingly, I should say. A few questions from my side. The first one, I would like to understand a bit better the market share gains you had, not only in the first half, but also obviously was continued now in Q3. In North America and also in EMEA. And EMEA, you obviously, you were talking a bit about excellence already, but just some more details on where you took those market shares, and do you think those gains are obviously sustainable, further increasable? That would be my first question. Thank you.
Okay. So as we just heard, in Europe, the main business we do with trailer axles, which is 90% of the OE business. Here we were able to keep up a short delivery time to our customers, to all our customers, doesn't matter if it's a bigger one or smaller ones. What we also were able in the course of 2020 that we re-signed long-term agreements with trailer manufacturers, bigger ones but also medium-sized ones, and those came in with a higher share of the total axles being used in their production. And what we also did, we did not cut back, for instance, application engineering. So our response time to new applications from our customers, doesn't matter if it was bigger ones or smaller ones, was very much in time, so we were able to gain some more business in trailer axles, which is for us also suspension. And on the North American side, what we did and what we already did the last 2 years with the restructuring program, we have new team members in quality, for instance. Sourcing, we upgraded. And specifically, our operations teams in our manufacturing plants in the US are now capable to react much faster to the demand. So, for instance, our OTD, the on-time delivery, we were able to dramatically increase to the positive, which was good for our customers. And also what we did not do, we did not cut back our fleet approach. So that means we have a dedicated fleet team in North America, so both in US and in Canada. And those guys are just calling on fleets. And since we have, for instance, for fifth wheels, a premium product which holds 55,000 pounds over just 50,000 of the two other suppliers into the industry, we are called the premium supplier. And the fleets, they calculate lifetime costs and everything. So we gained with some dedicated bigger fleets, we were able to convert back to our Holland fifth wheel.
That's great. Thank you. That's very helpful. And I think it's also a strong message, obviously, with the setup you have, particularly the new setup in North America. And then a question on this topic, actually, because if I look at obviously a margin of 5.6% and that and includes even inventory write-downs at the sales level of like 676 million, which is far from normalized sales level, this is an amazing result. But the question obviously would be, where do you see a normalized margin level post the plant consolidation and also the improvements you've done to the product portfolio? Is it something around the EMEA mark, say, or is it, Where could it be?
Frederick, this is a very tricky question you're asking, of course, which I will not answer directly, right? But you said it was impressive margin or something like that, not in my view, because even if we're somewhere around 5 or 6%, this is not the margin I would like to see for the Americas region. We are clear market leader in Canada, as I mentioned before, in the aftermarket, landing legs, fifth wheels, couplers. We have somewhere around 80 to 85% market share. So check mark. In Mexico, we are really strong in margins. With KLL in Brazil, we are very happy. We are supplying suspensions for trucks and buses. We gained that big order from Volkswagen for the e-truck, for the light e-truck, which is good. And we will see that also the next 5 years to kick in with higher sales. So our thing is the US. What we did in the course specifically, and we drove that further in the course of 2020, we took out loss-making sales. We had a lot of sales, which was really negative, not low margin, it was negative. And where we were not able to change this by maybe increasing slightly the prices, working on the foundation, on the cost base, also with the help of sourcing, we stopped that. Give you an example, bumper tubes. This is the end of a trailer, right? This is a product you use about 3,000 square meters in a production facility. You have to bend, you have to drill holes. This goes for $50 and you make $5 profit. Right? Gross profit, but at the end you don't earn any money. So we skipped that business. We will see in the future, maybe in the midterm, a little bit lower sales, but more profitability. And I have to say that again, even with 6% in Americas, I am not happy with that results, and we should come back to normal levels very soon.
Yeah, thank you.
I would maybe delay that question and the answer to that question to next week, because on the 25th we have our analyst day and we also give out a margin guidance for the years to come.
Okay, that's good to know. So then I hold my horses and I'm going to ask you again next week. But thanks for that. What I meant is the 5.6% relative to the low sales volume of 76 million, which I found is quite impressive. And if I think about where you have been historically at 100 million or so per quarter, so 400 million easily, and if the market is really good, also could be 500 million. So I'm just the fantasy is obviously you should show a margin which is clearly high single digit, if not, let's see next week.
Yes, perfect. But as I said again, the 5-point-something percent, I am not happy with. That should be higher. And we are working on that.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. And then just that's perhaps more for Ms. Colion. What is your guidance on, or could you give a guidance on one-offs in Q4? What would you expect, or what something you have booked already, or just fast for modeling purposes? Just to round it up.
Yeah, so for the first 9 months, we were at EBIT adjustments of 19.6 million, of which 11.7 million was restructuring. We gave the detailed breakdown in the presentation. So for full year, we're looking at a restructuring number of, around 14 to 15 million at max.
Yeah, perfect. And then would you be able to give a guidance also on other extra costs, or is it something you come by see so that the year is not over yet?
This is the only extra cost that we see for the months to come.
Yeah, okay, that's perfect. Thank you. And the next one I had also was, where do you see working capital at the end of the year? I mean, we're below 140 million now, which looks a very good level, but given that end markets are recovering, you're fully booked. Would you see that increasing towards year end, or where would you see it?
Well, working capital towards year end. I mean, normally the inventories are going down at year end. So that's kind of when we talk about trends into year end. And that's actually at the moment all I would say on that topic. Yeah. Again, the 9 months working capital was very good. Inventories are going down. Of course, we will manage our payables like all companies do, and receivables are mainly also driven by the revenues.
Yeah, okay. No, that's perfect. It was good to confirm that, because obviously when sales are picking up, you see an increase also in inventories, of course, and the likes. Okay, that's great. That's great to know. Obviously, you underline your efforts there in managing working capital. But thank you. Last one, and then I shut up. It's a tax rate guidance for 2020. Obviously, per the first 9 months, you were 22%. Where do you see that in the full year?
Yeah. So for the full year, we're talking about the effective tax rate. I would see it somewhere around 25-ish. 25 to 27, let's say.
Yeah. Perfect. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the next we have Mr. Philip Laurent from Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Yep. Thank you very much, Philip Laurent from Berenberg. Just wanted to come back a little bit on the strong EMEA adjusted and also adjusted EBITDA margin in Q3. Firstly, I did not catch exactly what you're mentioning with regard to the accounting effects there. Secondly, to come back generally to the margin, that's really a strong performance. I mean, I calculate with 13 or 13.1% adjusted EBITDA margin in Q3. Could you shed a bit more light on the sustainable underlying margin improvement that you have there? Because I guess in Q3 you probably had much less short-time work and this kind of support than you had probably in Q2. So you've been mentioning a little bit like the mix between the aftermarket and the new business. You've been also mentioning the market share gains that you have, especially in smaller trailer manufacturers. So is it all coming from the mix here, or is it coming as well and perhaps like principally from the recent investments that you have done, especially in terms of automation?
Philip, Alex Geis here. That's a very, very good, tough question you're raising. First of all, of course, we are not guiding EBITDA, okay? What we did in the appendix, we just wanted to give you a little bit highlights an insight into the what is adjusted EBIT versus adjusted EBITDA, because our adjusted EBITDA in the group as well in the regions is very good in my point of view. As I said before, it's not one or two things. For instance, the short-time work in Germany, we had in some other areas. This is a one-off for 2020. Okay, we don't see it. It's still a possibility, and it's given by the German government that we can extend that in 2021. From today's point, we don't see that. As I said before, the next 3 months we are nearly fully booked. And we have also a planned closure the last week of December and the first week of January in the German plants. So I don't think that we have to work short time. What I would like to say is the majority of those improvements and the stable adjusted EBIT and EBITDA is coming from the mix of, firstly, aftermarket, secondly, a much higher share of medium-sized and smaller customers we have, a good product mix, so profitable, small things we are selling, okay, which also add to that. We have also gained improvements in the plants where the teams are constantly working on, and also the automation we did, so the investments we did in 17, 18, and 19, of course, helped to counterbalance increased costs we had on the one side, but the automation helped to counterbalance that. And as I said before, for the next 5 years, we have that supplemental agreement for the two plants here, for the axle plants. We're also going to have that from next year on for the fifth wheel plant down in Singen, which is 10% of our total OE sales, as I mentioned before. So this is a big mix of all smaller items which help to keep that profitability in both adjusted EBIT and EBITDA.
Okay, so it's fair to assume that actually, like, if I net out like the increasing costs with the efficiency gains that you get from the investment, that would be probably like relatively neutral as an impact, and then you get like here on top a little bit of the mixed tailwind that might revert at some point over the coming year. So it's not like
No, you cannot say this is this one single thing which helped us. It's really a huge mix of different things. And what I also have to say, we have a very dedicated and specialized sourcing team, and we are constantly working on efficiencies in sourcing. We also added some more suppliers with consignment stock that also will help our network and capitals in the years to come, because it reduces the, let's say, the length of the freight or logistics, and this is pretty good. So I'm quite optimistic that we can continue to do this also in the years to come.
Okay,
specifically,
thanks for
knowing the EMEA market, which I was running for the last 5 years, so I'm very, very confident here in EMEA.
Okay, that's great to hear. Thank you very much.
And last question comes from Mr. Julien Bateau of Pascal Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yes, just a few questions from my side. The first one is for Inka. You mentioned that you received some, I would say, criticism or objection to the adjustments on the EBIT side. Would that mean that you would prefer to stop adjusting anything and just release the margin as a whole?
I said that we've had discussions on the quality of the earnings and on the adjustments. And I think we have already proven with the first 9 months numbers, which are much lower than last year in terms of adjustments, that we are improving, underlining. So the need for the adjustment is becoming lower. And what I said also, I will definitely have a more conservative approach when checking topics which could potentially be included in adjustments. But this is something then for 2021.
Okay. That's very clear. Second one on for you. You say that you expect more capital to continue improving, and that you had your eyes on it. Which element of the more capital do you think there is potential the most? Because if I look at inventories, they had increased a lot in 18 and 19. So is there still some potential here to reduce the structural level going forward,
well,
and how hard is it to do it with the rising market?
Yeah, so maybe just a couple of comments on that. Also, in my previous life, I have a lot of experience in managing working capital, increasing cash focus, and it's in industrial companies, and this is exactly what I'm going to do at SAF Holland as well. Also, the previous management has started with the Cash is King program, actions in this regard. The focus here was mainly on quick wins, and it was the right focus. The focus was to decrease the absolute level of overdues, and we've managed to do that quite significantly. Inventories also went down to some extent, but not as much as the overdues. So what we're planning right now is to do a restart or an extended project on the inventories, but to look really more here on the midterm and long-term process improvements. The Cash is King so far was really a program focused on short-term and quick wins. And it was done well. Now it will be more focused on midterm and long-term process improvements. So it's about inventories, but it's also about integrating the entire networking capital management with all its levers into the organization as part of the steering, as part of reporting, as part of forecasting, with the entire cash culture.
And then very last for me, you said you want to stop losing money in APAC in 2021. All is that dependent on the market behavior? I mean, do you need some tailwinds from the market to achieve it, or do you have levers to pull if the market was not coming back?
Can you repeat your question?
It's about the you say that APAC should try to break even in 2021. Against the loss in EBIT this year? How much is that dependent on markets being better, basically?
Well, actually, to be break-even, to give you an idea, in China, we only in brackets, have to manufacture around 25 to 30,000 axles, which is nothing. We manufacture in good years somewhere around 550,000 axles. Majority of that is disc brake axles. China is by far the biggest trailer axle market in the world. In good years, up to 1 million axles. Out of those 1 million axles, it's about 25 to 30% is in the premium segment. So we only need to get 10% market share in the premium segment to be positive. This is why we have challenged the team. This is also why our COO, Andre Philipp, is the president of China now, overlooking the whole team. Andre had been living for more than 11 years in China, knowing the markets. He was head of manufacturing there, of the plants, knowing the domestic rules and everything. He's overlooking the team, and we have a new team since beginning of this year and mid of this year, dedicated on sales. We need to get domestic sales, and if this upside potential might come that U.S. lowers the tariffs into the U.S., that would be a major boost for us. And we have seen in previous years we have been positive, also in China.
That's very clear. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
There are no further questions. Back to you, Mr. Geist.
So the last thing I would like to mention again, as I did before, next week on Wednesday we have our Capitals Market Day, which is the November 25th, and we'll give you much more insight into our strategy midterm, which goes in until 2025. And also here we will speak about a margin guidance midterm and much more fancy stuff we are coming up with new technologies, smart steel, and great ideas. So I would like to invite everybody to join us there. We will also do deep dives into the regions with the regional presidents, so for EMEA, for Americas, and also Andre giving a deep dive into China and the rest of Asia. Would like to see and hear you there, and everybody please stay healthy and trust in us. Thank you.